So just understanding who the club wanted to meet and who the, like, what the needs of the club was, I was really good at that. And so just by scheduling the right people to come in and speak, that grew the club from 40 members to now 75. So I'm like, okay, I'm onto something.
Hello, I am Josh Braun, and this is Inside Selling, a podcast about selling without selling your soul, where I talk a little bit about how to reduce sales pressure by just being yourself. Today, my guest, Sarah Groves. She was the president of the Syracuse Entrepreneurs Club. That is her phone going off right now. She's making things happen. She grew membership from 40 to 200 using a very creative and apparently controversial growth hacks. She also loves pizza so much that she created this app called Home Slice. Get this, you place the order for pizza based on toppings, not the restaurant. We'll get into that a little bit. She's currently a growth hacker at Banff Media. Sarah, thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks, Josh, for having me.
So let's get into this. There's two things I want to cover. The first thing I want to cover is how you were able to grow membership of an entrepreneur club that you had in Syracuse from about 30 or 40 to over 200 really quickly, because I think it's a super interesting story. And then next, I want to talk about how you went about getting a job at Banff through a rather untraditional approach that has nothing to do with resumes and job postings. So those are the things I'd love to cover today.
Yeah, sure. So I'll start off with the entrepreneurship club. When I was a freshman, it was about 20 to 40 members at any meeting. We'd invite speakers to come in. A lot of the time, chief executive officers would Skype in, and I just thought that there was so much more to do with entrepreneurs on campus. So I ran for director of programming. I started scheduling out the entire meeting schedule, and that really got us a lot of members. So just understanding who the club wanted to meet and who the, like, what the needs of the club was, I was really good at that. And so just by scheduling the right people to come in and speak, that grew the club from 40 members to now 75. So I'm like, okay, I'm onto something. And then the next year I
ran. How did you go about getting these people? Like, you just snapped your fingers and they showed up, or like, what was the process involved in reaching out and getting these people, and how'd you do that?
Yeah, for sure. So, I use LinkedIn all the time. And so I would do really targeted searches. I was actually just starting out on the platform, so I didn't know how like crazy targeting, you can do, and how really specific, keyword searches you can get. So I would look for chief executive officers in the Syracuse area. That's how I'd find people. And then I'd go back, I'd make a list of all these people who I could potentially invite, because it's close, it's cheap, it's really efficient for them to come, and it makes them feel more of a community. Like, building community was huge for entrepreneurship, especially right now on campus. And so I'd go back to my executive board, to my members, see which ones they would be most interested in, shoot them a cold email. And then after a cold email, I wasn't really doing great. So I just went in and reached out straight through LinkedIn. And it, just the message was super personal. Like, I told them my story. I told them I'm a student entrepreneur. I'm trying to help other student entrepreneurs. And just this community, like, feeds off each other.
You had mentioned you send out a cold email. You weren't getting responses, and then you were getting responses on LinkedIn. What happened? What was different about LinkedIn? And what was it, messaging? Was it the medium? Talk a little bit about how you ultimately got people to start leaning forward. It sounds like you kind of cracked that a little bit.
Sure. So I started to think about who I was getting in touch with, right? So CEOs, they get emails all day long. People from their company, from just random people. And it's not as crowded using LinkedIn, right? So an email, a message from me, really quick, short, it'll take you 5 seconds to read through. And it'll probably take you even shorter to just say yes or no as a response.
And this was a connection request that you sent this message in, like an initial connection request, because you weren't connected with them, I'm assuming.
Right. Right. So it would be in the initial, it would just be a customized request. Exactly.
Give me a sense of what that sounded like. Basically, what would that message sound like?
Hi, I was wondering if you were interested in speaking to a group of student entrepreneurs. I'm Sarah Groves, the president of the Syracuse University Entrepreneurship Club. We're looking for speakers for the upcoming semester.
Simple as that.
That's it, right. And what I noticed along the way is you really have to ask first, because they don't care. I mean, maybe they'll care if I'm a student, and maybe they'll care about my name. But they want to know why you're talking to them first. And so I kind of like eliminated that intro, and that it just made the conversation so much easier. There's no like fluff.
Totally. So that got it to 75, and then you kind of go from 75 to like another leap.
Right.
Tell me a little bit about that.
So that last leap was earlier, this fall semester. We targeted freshmen. So we were at the freshman, campus events. We really focused on freshmen from the year before. So when they were becoming, campus ambassadors and helping the other freshmen move in as like a rite of passage, they would always talk about the Entrepreneurship Club. So, I mean, on campus, there's hundreds of clubs, and we all had our own tables, and what can you do to make yourself stand out? So we played rap music. We were pretty loud about it. It's super like, you think like a startup is super like cool and hip and trendy. And so that we wanted to take entrepreneurship and move it more towards like new entrepreneurship startup, like cool, fresh, versus like the corporate, classical entrepreneur. And so that shift like really got people hyped about it.
And so you're now doing sort of like at events, you're in person, and that's taking it to like this other level.
Right. And so we kind of like, and what was crazy is that entrepreneurship, it was so coined by the business school that other communities on campus didn't think that they could touch it. And so once that business was taken down, it created more of like a campus-wide community versus this is your major, you should be in this club.
Totally. So that goes up from 75 to like
200, 300. We actually, this year we got 500 signups, so 500 emails. And on top of like I think we had like 700 emails from the following 3 years.
Now, I also read that you did something rather smart, and I want to understand this. In terms of the data you were collecting, you noticed that there was this lengthy time it would take to sort of sign people in. And
yes.
Especially when people sign into clubs, they're using a piece of paper, they're writing their name down. And you saw an opportunity there. Can you speak a little bit about what you thought was wrong and what you did to improve that process and what you learned?
When we were 40 members big, it was really easy to pass around a sheet of paper. You'd actually, each member would get a sheet with their own name on it, and they'd have to go back and find it, check off that they were there. And then if new people showed up, like their name would get like filtered down. It was just it's such a mess. Really hard to track. And so the first thing that we did was we started doing Google Forms. So we just had a link up on the board. There was a lot of typos. And I was like, okay, what does everyone have on their phone that could possibly, like, so I was thinking like maybe Facebook, like a Facebook group that I could do this. And then I was thinking, well, Snapchat, there's snap codes, right? So it's really easy to scan in and find someone else. And so I did a lot of digging, and just on the website, you can change a snap code, so that it redirects to a URL. So I was like, okay, let's put two and two together. I have an ability to scan in on something, and it redirects to this Google link that I have, this, form. So putting it together, it was really easy just to walk in. I'd have a sign on the board saying, don't forget to, take attendance. It would have like a shortened bit.ly link. So it's easier to type in if the code wasn't working. And just from there, they would give me their name, their email. And then every week I'd ask them a different question. And I make them all required. So 1 week we were thinking about doing more community service events, but we didn't know if we sent out an email just giving people opportunities, we didn't know if it was the right opportunities, if people were available at this time. I sent them an email with all the, asking them what community service they're more interested in. And then from there, here's the availability for that. And so that's just like one example about how we kind of like changed the club through attendance, and we got volunteer hours, and we did a lot of other like programming. I have like all these like random tidbits of information that I would kind of like sprinkle in emails here and there just to show that I'm listening.
And just to make sure I understand this, the advantage of using Snapchat rather than a shortened bit.ly link for the Google form was what?
So it's just, it was so easy. It's like recognizability. So Snapchat's super recognizable. And if you see a code, you know exactly what to do.
Got it.
And so a link was fine. It just took longer to type in, and there was more opportunity for human error.
Got it. Okay, so now comes to part of the story where some controversy happens.
Yes.
Now, I don't fully understand this, but set this up for us a little bit, because you're growing this thing from 40 to 75, you're rapping, you're getting a lot of data, things are going well, you got more people involved, you've kind of broken down the stereotype that this doesn't just have to be for business school students, and then something happens.
Right. So I have a strategy team on my executive board. And so I was working with one strategist very closely on building a student entrepreneur day. So we had a panel of students who we were just going to have a kind of like a question and an answer discussion. And we were talking, and we wanted to get sponsors for that little event. So we got national sponsors. We use the same tactics as we would when we reach out to speakers. And it was just a great way to kind of reapply what we've learned. And so with all these sponsors, we had to make it a bigger event. So we added a pitch competition that was sponsored. We added like a networking event in the beginning with like mocktails, really fun. And then we wanted to pitch it like a student entrepreneur festival, to get like a really hype, kind of like happy excitement around it. And so the week of the event, we had all these things in place, and I was like, shit, I have to market it now. And so it's Tuesday afternoon, the event's on the Friday, so it's in a few days. I was wondering, how do I get this in front of people? And so I went on hunter.io, searched Syracuse.com. And what hunter.io is, it basically scrapes the internet and finds all of the emails associated with like a generic domain name. So it just scraped the internet, found all of the emails that had syr.edu as an ending. So I had 5,000 emails just from that. And so I didn't filter anything. I didn't sort anything. I came up with this clever ad copy where it says, "Lost keys on Marshall Street" as the subject. And I knew people were going to click on it because Marshall Street is the most popular street on campus. It's like the main street. So even before they open it up, the email preview in their inbox, it says, you might have seen my post on the Syracuse University class of blank Facebook group. And that's really all you could see. And so it's super targeted. They know that it looked like I was a Syracuse student wanting like help. And then the next sentence is, "This email isn't about that." And so then it's just a flyer for this entrepreneurship event. I thought it was super creative. I was like excited about it. I posted on my LinkedIn. I posted all my tactics and everything. And the next day, I got a call from the assistant dean of the business school. Just asked, like, she was pissed. She was asking me questions. Well, how did I get all these emails? Who said I could do that? And I just didn't, I was like, this is a great PR stunt. Like, I loved it. I was like, I was laughing. I was like, this is awesome. And she was just so upset. And so she ended the call saying, "I'm not sure what the future of this event is. And it's Wednesday, right? And the event is going to happen in 2 days." So I was like, okay, let me know. So it's the next day, Thursday morning, I get another call. She says the email that I sent out was, it didn't put the school in a good light, or I don't like, it wasn't a positive reflection of the school. So they're postponing the event, and then they're removing me immediately from the entrepreneurship club. And that's all kind of like the information I had from there. So, I got a call from an ex-boss, and he was furious. He was like, "Sarah, what the hell is going on? What did you do wrong? Can you tell me?" And I just, they didn't tell me what I did wrong. So that's kind of like a breakthrough moment. Like, they can't just, this is a student club. Any faculty members shouldn't be making big decisions, especially removing people. And there was no process in place that, there was no like rules being followed on her end. And so I was just really confused. I sent out a bunch of emails asking what policies I was breaking. I'm still not like 100% sure. It was very, broad in the description of what I did and what rules I violated. And so that's really where I left it. I, had an in-person meeting. I printed out the, all of the policies you could ever find on Syracuse University, handed it to the assistant dean, and she could not highlight what I did wrong.
That's an amazing story, but not as amazing as what happens next to you.
Right.
So let's just talk about this. You now are, from what I read, you drop out of school?
Yes.
You're a junior or a senior?
I'm a junior.
And you drop out. What why are you dropping out?
Right. So at the same time, it was earlier in the winter, my vice president, actually, so the new president right now, he, we were talking and he was talking about this company, Banff Media. And he was like, hey, there's an internship position available. We kind of like made a bet, like who can get it. So I applied for it. He applied for it. And so we were kind of like, I got in touch with the CEO, and I had my own tactics, and we can definitely talk about that because that was a cool story there.
Yes, that's what I want. So this is what I really want to talk about. So there's two of you and you both want this internship.
Yes.
People would write a cover letter and send a resume. You did not do that.
So actually, it's funny. So I did do that, but it never went through. I pressed finished and like the files that I sent were just gone. They never received it. So to get in contact with them, what I did first was I was part of this Facebook group. It was like a growth hacking, growth marketing. And I was like super new and I just like had all these like crazy ideas and I wrote it all down and I published it there. So that was my outlet. And this one guy, he followed me on Facebook. He followed me on LinkedIn. And I realized he was a part of the company, Banff. So I was like, okay, cool. I already have this friend who knows me. He knows who I am. He knows kind of, I have some credibility with this guy. I'll reach out to him. I saw that he was newly hired. And so I said, hey, we're a part of this group together. I saw you liked my posts. I just applied for this position. Could you tell me about your experience? And so from there, I asked him like who I should talk to. He said, just go right to the CEO. And then that was the referral. I actually just came out with a guide. I'm publishing it today, actually, about kind of like a step-by-step process.
So he says, go to Josh Fletcher.
Yeah.
Exactly. What do you do? You email Josh Fletcher, you pick up the phone, because this is fascinating. There was a bunch of things that happened there. How'd you get in touch with Josh? You emailed him and said, hey, this person suggested I contact you, or?
Right. So I actually asked him, how do I get in touch? Because I knew he, as a CEO, super busy, and especially Josh, thousands and thousands of people. I found his personal Facebook. I just sent him a message. It was actually like a copy of and paste what I sent in my first message. And just from there, I kept on bugging him. Let's jump on a call. Let's do a Skype. Can you give me a case study? Okay, now I have a case study. Now, do you have any real work for me? Can I like help you out with here? Until like finally he had a project for me to do.
So wait a second. You reach out with this email. He doesn't respond. You keep reaching out. You're asking for a case study. What is that exactly? That's like a project that he has that he wants done, or?
So this was all through Facebook Messenger. Like no emails were sent. It's all super casual. I hopped on the phone just to introduce myself. And then I wanted to prove that I was worth working for him. Like I know my chops. And so a case study would be, I was thinking about, there's a situation, let's say he wanted to get in touch with an advertiser. How do you do it? And that's kind of like understanding how I thought. And so he finally found one. It was actually, how do I get lunch with 100 people? And the only information that I got was their LinkedIn URL. And so I came up with this whole process of assigning like numerical values from their like LinkedIn information, and that would like reorder it. And it was like, I don't know, it was like this crazy process where it would reorder it. And then based on who I thought would reach like response. And so I gave that to him. And then he loved it. He thought it was so cool. And from there on,
I was just back just this ranking of how you thought about your priority in terms of how you were going to approach them from highest to lowest, essentially based on those criteria.
Right. And so not only that, but I gave him an Excel sheet that did it like step by step by step. So all you would need to do is put in the raw data, and then the next, you would go to the next tab and it would have it filtered a little bit more, and the next tab filtered a little bit more until like you reach the end, and it would be like it would just add it perfectly into the ranking.
You had some formulas that you were applying and some magic.
Right. And so I guess from there, he was impressed. He just didn't have any work for me. Cause it was, I applied, I guess, for the internship, and the whole way through he was saying, he's not looking for interns. He wants to bring people on full time. And so the conversation, moving forward was if I was offered a position, I was going to drop out. And so that's kind of when I knew if I wanted to join the team, I was going to drop out of school. And so it all coincidentally like was happening at the same time. And I didn't really get an offer until, the whole entrepreneurship catastrophe happened. That's when the day after is actually when he sent me an offer letter.
Interesting. But I also read about him wanting to have some meetings with like 40 or 50, you know, CEOs. Was this a second part to once you ranked the people on the spreadsheet, you then reached out to him and got meetings? Because from what I read, you did do something where his ask was, I would like to get in front of, have some conversations with these 40 or 50 people. Was that part of this or was that something else? Or talk to me a little bit about that.
Right. Well, so then he gives me this case study. He loves my response. And so the first real assignment he has me on is a Kickstarter. So he's writing a book right now. The book is a collection of interviews from the fastest growing companies and the growth positions within them. And so that's kind of, I took the idea of kind of like ranking. I actually didn't end up using it. I came up with a whole different process on how to get in contact with people, like knowing people first and then kind of like utilizing their public information to like get really targeted and get really personal with the message. But all those interviews that I was booking with C-level execs is for this book.
So talk to me a little bit about that. The ask was, I need some meetings with 40 or 50 people. You then do what? You go into your network and you see who of those people you're sort of first degree connected with. And you, I mean, just walk me through that. Cause I think a lot of people are like, well, how do you do that?
Right.
I read that headline. I'm like, that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah. I don't know. Josh is awesome. The first day he actually like understood like kind of my mindset and how I work. He gave me his credentials to everything. So what I did was I took out, I used his LinkedIn connections and because at the end of the day, he's talking to them. So if the people know him, that's as good as if they know me. So I took his LinkedIn connections. He's connected with, 40,000 people, which is ridiculous. And so LinkedIn, you can really easily export that data. So what's the fastest growing companies?
So you went into his first degree connections, you export that, and then you ran it through another tool, it sounds like, to sort of rank these things in terms of priority.
Right. So there's a tool called Phantom Buster. And basically what it is, it'll go into your LinkedIn, you connect your LinkedIn to it, and it'll scrape information. And so the information I was looking for is company information because I was looking for only the fastest growing companies. So I did that based off of company size. Location was important. Just making sure they can speak English, role, title, and all these factors. And so I had this list of probably 400 names, emails, and LinkedIn URLs that were first degree connections of Josh's and would be perfect to be interviewed.
And then you go about reaching out to them using your LinkedIn or you're still in his, sending the actual messages.
So it's kind of funny. So it's a little bit of both, honestly. I also did it with my own network as well. It was a little bit of both.
And the messages similar to what you were doing with the Entrepreneur Club in terms of the message, was seemed like it was very succinct. Like, tell me a little bit about the message. You're reaching out to these 400 people. Sounds like you got about 35 or 40 of them, which is a huge response rate. Talk to us a little bit about the message.
So they knew Josh, they either knew me or they knew Josh. So when they knew Josh, it was really easy to convince them. I didn't have to go into detail about who he is. I didn't have to sell who he was. So again, it was really similar to what I would do to reach out to entrepreneurs for the Entrepreneurship Club. Hey, are you interested in an interview? I'm writing a book about the fastest growing companies and the people behind them. If you didn't know, I already wrote five books, or I like something to give me credibility. Let me know. Thanks.
And that's it.
Easy as that. Easy as that.
Within a couple of days, you have 35, 40 people saying, yeah, I'll do that. And then you sort of send a Calendly link to book the time, I guess.
Right. And so it took a long time to figure out, the best time to message people. That also took like a lot of testing. I would reach out to people early in the morning. I'm actually on the East Coast. Everyone who I was reaching out to was on the West Coast. I didn't make that connection that, hey, if I'm sending it at 9 o'clock in the morning here, it's going to be 6 o'clock over there and they're not going to get it. And then on top of that, I started following up. So if I didn't get a response from you in 2 days, I'd just say, hey, I'm twiddling my thumbs over here. Let me know what you're doing.
And how did you keep track of that? You had another spreadsheet that showed the time. You were using like an Airtable, or were you using like Excel to keep track of how to follow? Because that's a lot of names to manage.
Right. And so honestly, I don't use LinkedIn Messenger a lot. So the only messages that I had there were the ones that I was sending out. So I didn't have any extra help or extra organizational structure. It's really easy actually in LinkedIn. You can export your messages.
So in you were exporting the LinkedIn messages, and you were using that as a basis to see which people to reach back out to for the second sort of touch if they didn't respond. Pretty simple.
Right. I didn't do that, but that's, you could totally do it. It's just LinkedIn Messenger. I didn't use it at the time to like message other people or have any other projects going on. So it was really easy for me to just go through and make sure everyone was contacted at the right time.
And once that project was finished and you performed, I mean, you got 40 responses. Was at that point you were offered the job?
So, no, not yet. I was, it really just happened after the whole catastrophe with, the Entrepreneurship Club. So I didn't even tell him it was going on. I didn't tell anyone at Banff what was happening. Josh, actually the CEO, saw one of my posts. He liked it, and he immediately was like, Sarah, what the hell is going on? Like, tell me about it. He was excited about it.
This was after the stuff that you had done for him. This was after the 40 meetings and the,
okay, yeah, this is after. And so we, again, we hopped on a call. I talked to him about it. He was so excited about it. And then also other people in the company were like reaching out, and it was so exciting and so much fun. And then the next day he was like, all right, here's the letter. We got you're offered the job.
And was there a part of you that was like, look, Syracuse is a tough school to get into. You're doing really well in there. Was there any part of you that was like, what am I doing dropping out of college? Or that wasn't, you weren't even thinking about it. You were just like, kind of knew this, it just felt right.
I mean, it definitely feels right. Especially now seeing, I feel like I'm a lot more involved in like what I figured out exactly what I love to do. And so I'm kind of being at school now, I'm taking a lot, it won't really help me in my future. I'm taking a lot of like humanities courses and all these anthropologies that I might apply a few lessons, but in the long run, I'm taking time away from like bettering a skill that I'd use every day. So, and instead of going to class, I'd, you know, like be in my apartment on my computer, teaching myself like different Udemy classes, different Excel functions and all that stuff. And I just couldn't focus on class. And so once I kind of made that switch to only like self-learning, it was a no-brainer.
This is a key thing that I realized about you, and I want you to speak just a little bit about it, is that you're sort of the CEO of your own learning.
And this
idea that you are waiting for someone to impart knowledge on you, you don't really agree with. You've talked to me a little about you. How do you learn this stuff? You're kind of just going out and you are making your own university in a sense. Talk to us a little bit about that.
I don't know. It's just, it's funny. So I now get to interact with like a lot of software tools that I've never even heard of before. And one software tool, I'm like, okay, this is a cool, it kind of like each software tool and function only gives, I think of this is that it only gives you half the capacity, right? And so what gives it the full capacity? These other tools that interact with it that you can build on top of. And so once you kind of like think about it like that, like how can I take a Google Excel sheet and apply that information and kind of like make a process that goes to an email list or that goes to my LinkedIn that helps me in a different way. And just like thinking how one thing connects to another, that gets me excited and that gets me onto these online courses.
So what are you doing now? Let's talk about Banff, what Banff does and what you're doing now.
Sure. What I'm doing now is I am still managing this Kickstarter. So I actually have a few more dozen interviews to schedule and book. That's going to take a lot of my time. We really want to kick ass on that one. And then the other thing that I'll be doing is I'll be leading a kind of like a LinkedIn Pro kind of membership where I can help you prioritize your LinkedIn accounts. I can help you get sales through like email lists and kind of like all the things that helped me get this job. They're really like highlighting my skills and my tools that I know.
And who is the buyer for this? Are these people like me? Are these for college students? Could it be anyone? This is very interesting. LinkedIn Pro. It's like a course or it's a consulting or what exactly is it?
So it's actually exactly what Banff does as a company, except them doing it for you. I'm teaching you the tools. So I'm going to be like a dedicated helper, assistant, motivator to make sure that you're posting all the time. And it's really for either, I guess, business owners who want to increase sales or just like people like me who want to be like their own entrepreneur, their own voice, and don't really know how to do that yet.
Sarah, it was absolutely fantastic to get to know you. If people want to get in touch with you at Banff and want to work with you, how do they do it?
For sure. Definitely jump onto the website, banff.media, or you can actually shoot me an email. It's sarah@banff.media. It's BAMF.media.
Thank you so much, Sarah. You have been a pleasure and best of luck to you in your career. I know you're going to crush it over there at Banff.
Thank you, Josh.
You take care.
Bye.